No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do.
No, we don't.
A donkey eat and a donkey eat a pellet. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, filth. But I burst out laughing watching him.
So we've had a fantastic weekend of hurling. Hurling's back. What were we all worried about in a shitty old league? And we were reading too much into it, and we have the real stuff now. Two brilliant games on Saturday. Lots of controversy, loads of stuff to talk about. I'm going to try and give each game equal importance, but we're going to start with Kilkenny Wexford. Paul Murphy, like, I mean, this was the game of the weekend. I don't think anybody will argue with that. Hard to know where to start.
Yeah.
It had everything, this game. It had letting the game flow like we all wanted. It had drama, it had controversy, it had extra time, you name it. It had, and Hawkeye loves Kilkenny, Paul, what can we say?
Yeah, I was at the match, and I was actually laughing because once Hawkeye turned around with a taw, obviously it was a point for Wexford. Every Kilkenny fan cheered, and every Wexford fan was kind of half booing or giving out. I said, it's the first time you'll see every Kilkenny fan cheering a Wexford point. But Owen Murphy was a relieved man. But where do you start with the match? Brilliant match, end to end. I mean, we got more than we bargained for, even with the extra time. So, brilliant match. Both teams, I mean, there was players dropping with cramp at the end. Everybody exerted themselves. And Fergal Horgan had a great match as well. So, you know, huge score. And there was actually a bit of an atmosphere in Croke Park as well. 8,000 people, but there was a great atmosphere. Maybe we're just used to crowds at the moment, but great atmosphere. So it was a brilliant match to see, yeah.
Imagine, Brian Carroll, what it'll be like when we've 80,000 in Croke Park. You'll have to turn the volume down on your television if you say, this is too loud.
It was a thriller, in all fairness. And look, I think Paul has touched on it. Fergal Horgan deserves great credit. They say common sense isn't in the rule book, and it isn't, but by God did he apply it on Saturday, and he just let it flow as best he could. He blew up when he had to blow up. He applied the advantage rule perfectly at times, but he led it back to just that open warfare that we all love about hurling, and hard hitting, and there was loads of tackles flying in. And Wexford threw the kitchen sink at, and I think Wexford would have beaten a lot of teams on the day, only that this Kilkenny team were so primed to try and get one back over on Davy, because he has had the upper hand over Kilkenny over the last number of years. And I know he threw a bit of a null and void kind of team against them in the league, but it did look that day, because it was down in Nolan Park, it did look like Kilkenny were starting to figure out how to finally play against Wexford. And I think that really showed on Saturday that they knew how to play the ball out through the back line really, really well. And they mixed it up lovely with going long at times as well. It caused a lot of problems for Wexford. And then Wexford's game plan is so punishing on their players. Like, we know how elite fitness they have. You know, you're talking Dermot O'Keefe, Lee Chin, Sean Murphy, all these guys. They're just phenomenal. Lee Moog McGovern. And to see so many of them go down with cramp, it just shows how punishing that Wexford game plan is. I'd say their GPS numbers are off the charts. I'd say they're up there along with any Premier League team. And remember, they're only playing 70 minutes and then as opposed to 90. And it's high-octane stuff as well. So you won't be surprised to see so many of them go down with cramp. But also, the other thing that shows up is how fit this Kilkenny team, and how fit they've always been under Brian Cody when he's in charge of them.
Well, that was a big thing that struck me. We know Wexford are an all-action team and they are very fit. But geez, Kilkenny were an all-action team, yeah, and they didn't wane. And, like, I mean, Tommy Walsh is running up the field at the end of the game and he's flicking it off the hurl, putting it over. Like, you know, if Wexford did that, we'd be lauding their style about how they can attack from everywhere, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that was really evident in the last 10 minutes of the game was, you know, there was a lot of Wexford players dropping, which, you know, you can't fault them. They're after playing a really hard match. But Kilkenny, especially even the players off the bench, they just had too much in the legs for Wexford. And, you know, I think whatever Kilkenny are doing, you know, strength conditioning wise, they're in a, you know, great place really at the moment. I think when you're pulling Walter Welch off a bench, you know, he's 100 kgs and 6'6", and you're putting him in on a fellow who could be possibly cramping. Jimmy Marr came on. Jimmy Marr has an enormous amount of running. I think he got popped up with 2 or 3 points. Connor Fogarty, Killian Buckley. I mean, the players that were coming off the bench, again, James Bergen came on, had to go back off when Darren Brennan or when Owen Murphy was sin-binned. And then he came back on. I think he knocked over 2 points as well. So in the last, I think particularly if you're in Croke Park, I mean, it probably wasn't caught on television, but there was a lot of Wexford players going down. Again, you can't criticise them. They probably just didn't use the bench as much as Kilkenny did. Players were wilting all over the pitch. I think Owen Cody, and could see maybe Park Welsh was dropping as well. But there just seemed to be one or two extra more players with Wexford. Again, possibly that situation of their running game catching up on them a small bit. But yeah, it just seemed to be that Kilkenny had the small bit at the end, and 7 or 8 points was probably flattering to win by. But once they got that bit of a lead, Wexford just couldn't hold them anymore, and they just collapsed a small bit.
Yeah, that's how it's seen. Oh, what about the penalty? Because we're going to give out about the penalty later on in the Clare Tip game. I think everybody listening knows that we're going to get to that. But in this game, in defence of this rule, Brian, this was the perfect decision. This is exactly why the rule was brought in, and nobody could complain in any way about this.
No, I think it was spot on. It was the perfect example, as you said. I think this rule was brought in to stop the cynical fouling, the clear-cut goal-scoring opportunities. And, you know, Murphy would hold his hands up and say he knew exactly what he was doing. He pulled him down. And the consequence were, obviously, it was the penalty. I still think, and again, we can debate this later on, but I still think the sin bin, I think it's a double punishment. I think this is where the real controversy lies, the fact that you have to go 10 minutes without the player. I just think it's too severe a punishment. But the penalty, as you said, absolute perfect call. And Darren Brennan was very unlucky because he made a fair effort to stop him, Mark Fanning's shot. It was back across his weaker side too for Darren Brennan. Very, very unlucky. But I think, I suppose, the key thing there was Wexford didn't capitalise on the extra man in that 10-minute period of extra time, first half. You know, they only scored 2 frees after that, both Leachy and frees. And, you know, Kilkenny got a couple of scores. Could have got a goal through on Cody as well. He was very unlucky when it went over the bar. But somehow Kilkenny worked their way back into it to only be a point down. Getting back on level parity going into that second period of extra time.
Just in the lead up to that penalty, what was Paddy Deegan thinking? To lob a ball back in across the field with a load of hang time on it.
Yeah. Look, every team is trying to use the ball, each and every ball they get. They're trying to use it really well and pick out a player. And sometimes in that situation, you can force the issue a small bit. And Paddy will know this himself. You know, he looked across, and in fairness to him, he kept his composure. And if he did make a pass there, people would have said, you know, and actually, to be honest, I think another 5 or 10 yards and he would have made a great pass. But that's the risk you're taking. He landed it straight into Lee Chin's hand. So, look, sometimes, I mean, I'd always say that if you are in doubt, especially if you're in the back line, if you are in doubt and you don't think you can make the pass, you know, that's where you start banging one towards the edge of the square. So, look, Paddy will know that himself. He knows it was a dodgy pass to do and they were punished accordingly. But, you force the issue too much. Sometimes you'll crop up a few easy balls like that, and unfortunately, it happened for Paddy Deegan.
Yeah, it definitely did. Like, I mean, the game ebbed and flowed so much. This one made it such a brilliant game, Brian. Like, I mean, at one time you thought Wexford were well in control; they're 4 points up. Then you think Kilkenny are well in control. Like, I mean, I remember specifically Kevin Foley was turned over under the Cusick stand by Adrian Mullen, and TJ Reid got a pint and it put Kilkenny 4 up, and I went, look, I remember just thinking to myself, that's the end, that'll be the end of Wexford now. And it wasn't. They came back again, and then David Dunn got the goal from a puck out, and Brian Cody thought the game was over. Did you see him put the hands up into the head? Like, that was such a huge score at that stage, Brian. Like, I mean, it wasn't just a great game because it was nip and tuck. One team pulled away, got caught, then Kate went behind. It was incredible that way.
Yeah, it really was, and I suppose that's what made it such a thriller. It was like they got their periods of ascendancy and they made hay because they were able to rattle off 3 or 4 scores in a row. So, you know, there was that 2-3-4 point swing, as you said, at times. I think the David Dunn goal was brilliant thinking from Mark Fanning and Wexford. I don't know if that was pre-planned or not, but obviously Pádraic Walsh was marauding down the wing, went for shot. We've seen him score an unbelievable point like that in Wexford Park a couple of years ago. But obviously Wexford said, right, if he goes out of the centre like that, bang it straight down the middle, you know, and he got caught underneath the puck out, and so they knew what they were at, and David Dunn just obviously still a breaking ball, but they knew that their hole was there, and you know, he did well to finish it to the back of the net. You know, you probably would have seen a pull down only for that rule. I think that's where the new rule actually maybe helped open play in that situation, because he probably would have been pulled down. But he took the goal really well. And as you said, it looked like Wexford then had their moment, you know, that they were going to kick on, but somehow Kilkenny forced their way. And amazingly, it was Wexford that had to come back at the end to try and draw it. So it was just, yeah, I just think, you know, you have to tip your hat to both teams, because it takes two teams to really make a thriller over like they did. And as I said from the outset, I think Wexford would have beaten a lot of teams on the day. It's just that staying power and that willingness to stay going to Kenny, that they really weren't going to lie down to Wexford on the day. I can't say I'd agree with Davey with his kind of take on it after the game, that he felt that Wexford were clearly the better team over the 70 minutes. I don't think you could call it. I think you know, a draw was a fair game over 70 minutes. You know, it's very, I know he was in the heat of the moment and calling it as he saw it from his team, but for me, it was the draw was the fair game. It was the extra time. I think the 8 points, and I think Paul said it earlier, it did flatter Kilkenny for a finish.
I know, it definitely flattered Kilkenny. There's no doubt about that. It was more the second period they pulled away. Like, I mean, Davey said they were the better team over the 70 minutes. Like, you could make an argument to say that's the case, but you could make an equal argument to say Kilkenny was the case. That's why probably you come back to Brian and the draw was the fair result. I don't know what Davey's gaining by saying that.
No, yeah, and like Brian is saying, it could be the heat of the moment, because I think anybody who watched that match looked at it and said the draw was the fair result. I mean, it just ebbed and flowed so much, and that's what we enjoyed about it. I couldn't say at any stage where I thought, oh, Kilkenny lost that, or Kilkenny threw that away, or likewise at Wexford. There was times there where I thought, Wexford, they're after pushing up by 3 now, Kilkenny are in trouble here. But likewise, Kilkenny got up by about 3 points and went, oh yeah, we're you couldn't call it. So to say either was the better team in the 70 minutes, it wasn't. But something I thought that was interesting about the Dunn goal was that he was actually better off. Kilkenny were better off that he actually scored the goal, because Jimmy Maher had pulled him and dragged at him and flicked at him, and he could see Fergal Horgan was going to say, this is a penalty. He scored the goal and he waved it, will allow the goal. So as a result, didn't have to punish Jimmy Maher. Right. Jimmy Maher stayed on the pitch for what would have been the 10 minutes he would have been off. So as when I saw the goal at the time, I said, they're actually better off to let Wexford score here. Not let him score, but if Owen Murphy saved it, Jimmy Maher was going to the sideline for 10 minutes. So it allowed them, like Brian was saying, it's a double punishment. They were probably going to score a goal anyway from a penalty. So you're just going, do you know what? We're better that we have 15 men on the pitch here now at this time, because, you know, you wanted the next 10 minutes. Exactly what Kilkenny did, pulled back the lead by having 15 men on the pitch.
Yeah, they actually, Paul, the way they dealt with the sin bin was incredible.
Mm. Yeah, it was. And they kind of knew, well, you knew you were going to have to put on a keeper anyway. But I thought, in fairness, Kilkenny the weekend, something that probably haven't done over the last few years, initially they started off really well. They pulled back, and you could see they're right back to the 45, their full forward line. But after about 15 minutes, they said, no, this isn't working. We're going to push it up a small bit here now. And they got real results off that by pushing up, making Fanning go long, winning the puck outs and turning them over. But then, like you said, when the man was sent off, when Owen Murphy was sent off, James Bergen came off, Darren Brennan went into goal, and then they sat back again and basically said, right, we're going to weather the storm here now for 10 minutes. And once Wexford didn't get too much results off it, it nearly gave more of a kind of an impetus to Kilkenny. Kilkenny were now going, we are after weathering this, we're about to get a man back now. And again, that's where the bench really came in for Kilkenny, because James Bergen had to go off, but then he had to come back on a while later, and it didn't seem to faze him. So what I really admired about him, that they maybe, you know, Kilkenny teams that I was part of maybe 2 years ago mightn't have been prepared for that. You know, it's hard to call, but they did react to being down a man really well, set up really well, and the players worked really well as well, knowing they're down a man.
Yeah, they seemed, they definitely did. Talking about bringing players off and on, like, I mean, Declan O'Keefe was taken off and brought back on 7 minutes later, and Sean Murphy was brought off and brought on 7 minutes later. Brian, like, I mean, when you're taking off two very important players like that, surely they're completely wrecked.
Yeah, look, that's a bad call, being honest, Willie. It's not a club situation where, you know, you really are only working with your 17 or 18 players. Davey has, I'm sure, 35, 36 guys at least inside in that panel. How do you turn around to them and tell them honestly that I trust this panel? You clearly don't. And, you know, he's used a lot of them during the league, and, you know, he should have went to his bench. And that's, I think, what Kilkenny did. And you have to trust him, because as good as Lee Chin is, he was on one leg, he was thrown in full forward. He was clearly not right. They had to take him off. It just doesn't work at Intercounty. You know, if you're not right, you don't play. I think Brian Cody's ruthless in that situation. And Paul, you've seen it obviously more than myself and Willie have seen it. But if you're not right, you just don't play. It doesn't matter who you are, you're off. And he's right. It's just too high stakes at Intercounty level. And it's just a bad, bad call. But I want to go back maybe just for a second to how Kilkenny dealt with that Wexford goal. I think they really learned from their Leinster final defeat in 2019. When, you know, Wexford got a goal with maybe about 7 or 8 minutes to play or 10 minutes to play, and Kilkenny kind of panicked coming down the closing stages and maybe started lobbing balls in and went for goals instead of actually taking their points. And they actually had 3 points scoring opportunities that day in the Leinster final 2 years ago to maybe actually get a draw over it. Whereas I thought Kilkenny stayed composed on Saturday and actually worked the ball up the field and took their points as they arose. So it's not to underestimate how much work Kilkenny have done in the background in terms of their style of play and the way that they actually approached those closing moments in the game, and they didn't panic. And I think that's what Cody has to be given credit for. And as I said, along with the substitutions, I think he got it right. On the other hand, I don't think Davey got those substitutions right.
Who would have thought of Kilkenny are a tactical team now, Paul?
We've always been. We're just lying to you the whole time.
But I did notice, I see all that, a lot of the way the middle's a battleground and they dropped off and it, and then they'll just launch a long one, which I love to see. There's variety there, you have to keep them guessing.
Yeah, and that's it. And it's the balance of working the short play with the long play. Like, if you want to, if your real aim is you have a dangerous man in at the edge of the box, and you want to hit long ball on top of him. Well, what you have to do is you actually kind of have to play the short game so that the half back line, the midfield on the opposition, starts stepping up on you, because they're going, they're going to play it short if we step off them. And as a result, they pull out. Now you can land your long ball in. And they did it. Owen Cody won one or two balls in on the edge of the box. And now you have a full back line who are going, what do I do here now? Do I play from behind, play in front? And, when you see that acres of space in front of you as a full back line, that's the dream situation for the forward line. So, Kilkenny got the mix right there of stepping back. You see Walter Welch, even when he came on, he tracked right back. He was back in the left half-back position for Kilkenny. Won a ball and then turned and had a little look and popped it off. And Kilkenny worked the ball into Owen Cody on the right side. And you look at the space that was around Owen Cody. That was because Wexford had to pull up, because Kilkenny were coming out looking for that ball, looking for it. And it's a case of you either step up and mark your man and leave the space behind you, or don't step up, cover the full back line, and Kilkenny will put it over then from 60 yards out. So mixing it, finding the balance is just the key in playing that game.
Yeah, and Kilkenny definitely seem to have done it. What about Walter's goal, Brian? Does anyone in hurling, does any hurling person not love Walter Walsh? He's a fan's favourite in every here's the thing, we're going to talk about goal scoring opportunities and we all agree on James Owen's decision. Don't think I'm making up any argument not. But when Walter Walsh caught that goal, was that a goal scoring opportunity, Brian?
You're playing devil's advocate here. And thanks for throwing this one to me. No, it was. There's no doubt about it. The second he caught it, you just knew he was on the inside of his marker. The Wexford players, were the wrong side. He had the kind of yard on them, and he was bearing down the goal. So there was no doubt about it. It was very hard, and as we subsequently seen, it was very hard for Wexford to get cover across to actually stop him. And he's much quicker than people might appreciate. They might have seen it on Saturday how quick he was for such a big man. And he's so powerful of as well. But he did really well, because of the way he finished it to avoid the hook was really good. And it was a great finish. And it pushed Kilkenny. It finished the game out, really. They tagged on a couple of points afterwards, but that was more Wexford obviously were hitting, a little bit of high and hope ones down into the other square, and they kind of sucker punched them with a couple of points under them. But the goal obviously was the one, it was the death knell for Wexford. So it was a great goal, full stop. Just that ability to win your own ball, obviously Walter Walsh has that in spades, the height of him, as Paul said earlier, but just obviously showing pace and finish, brilliant goal.
Yeah, Davey wasn't happy about the reaction. Did you see his quotes about James McGarry now after the Walter Walsh goal?
Yeah.
So you could see James McGarry's reaction when they got the second goal. He nearly jumped out of the stand and came down to tell me about it. So it must have meant a lot to them, which is great. And fair play to him. I'm glad to see his enthusiasm is so big, but I won't forget it.
Yeah, it's the most Davey comment I think you can come away with. But look, Davey would recognise when a lad is celebrating. It was a funny one. But it followed the comments also as well of saying that he thought that they were the better team over 70 minutes. So look, the blood was up in Davey, and it was a big match for him as well. So yeah, look, it's he didn't say anything bad, James McGarry. I didn't see it. He could have celebrated all right. And
if he did, he did.
If he did, he did. He's entitled to.
Come here, just Paul, I'll ask you this one. Was that a Wexford collapse? Because I'm thinking of the Lee Chin goal against Tipperary that year in the Ireland semi-final. And for all watching that game, you think, Jesus, here they go now. Mm. And they never, I don't know the stats. I don't think they scored much after that. And that was even after Tip having a man sent off. They've scored that penalty. They're 3 points up, a man up in extra time.
Yeah.
You could put that there. Is there something mentally here working?
I'd say I wouldn't call it a collapse. No, I wouldn't be too hard on Wexford saying it that way. What it seemed to be was that, we saw that Kilkenny kept coming back. Likewise, Wexford kept coming back at Kilkenny when Kilkenny went ahead. But, you know, they got the goal, they went the goal up, and Kilkenny came back again. And once they drew level, Kilkenny maintained the pace they were playing at, maintained, you know, what they were doing, kept the intensity up, whereas Wexford just seemed to kind of peter off a small bit. You know, they just couldn't, like we said, we're talking, you know, they brought back on players that were after playing 70 minutes of hurling and you're throwing them back in. Whereas Kilkenny were bringing lads off the bench who were mad for road, had a point to prove. Were, like, again, I mentioned James Bergen already, but he came on and you could see what he's doing off the ball. He got balls and he put them over the bar. Walter Walsh is coming on and he played, okay, he played the second half of the match, but he came on and he had a point to prove and there was fire in the belly. They just seem to, Kilkenny used all bar two subs on the match panel for the day, whereas we're looking at Wexford bringing back on lads. They just couldn't maintain what was happening. So I think Kilkenny stayed at the standard, stayed at the level, kept the intensity, and Wexford just petered off. I wouldn't call it similar to a collapse.
No,
it wasn't
more
in
tired.
Their hands.
Yeah,
they're just tired.
Yeah.
That was it, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Maybe a collapse is a little bit. Two bad misses, though, from Chin and MacDonald, Brian, which they'll be kicking themselves over. Like, they're gimmies for those two players. There's no doubt about that. Here, actually, Owen, we'll do performance of the weekend here because we've loads of games to get through. I'm giving it to Owen Cody. We don't have time to go through a list. Did he come of age, Brian? Like, I mean, is this Owen Cody after putting in his first year and like some of the scores he got, and they were all hard scores, Brian. There was none tapped to a young lad and put them over. These were scores being tightly marked, shaking his man off and sticking him over.
He was absolutely excellent. I agree with you on the performance the weekend too, from a Kilkenny perspective. Absolutely. But 1-5, you don't score 1-5 too easily against a Wexford team, especially with a sweeper. And they were lucky to have a sweeper because Kevin Foley made a great save, the block down from me, and there was a little tug on his arm just before that as well. And he was unlucky. He hit the post as well with another opportunity. So, like, you know, he could have scored 3-5 and had a you know, another couple of opportunities. So it was a brilliant performance. But anyone that knows anything about Owen Cody, his performance at Ballyhale, the underage with Kilkenny, this guy has it. You know, he was Young Hurler of the Year last year. And he had a decent first season. You know, that kind of way. He picked up his Young Hurler of the Year, and there wasn't a huge amount of candidates for it, but he probably still deserved it on the overall. If you looked at the candidates that were going for it, he had a good year for Kilkenny. But as you said, I just think this was the game where the whole country now has woken up to how good Owen Cody is. He's a huge find. And, you know, you add that into Adrian Mullen, who's only coming back. His work rate was unbelievable as well the other day. He's another, obviously, star as well in the making. He's a former Young Hurler of the Year too. So it's Kilkenny, you know, they have it. You know, you add in TJ too and a couple more. So these boys are not going anywhere. And it's phenomenal that, you know, people are calling for Cody to go over the last number of years. Maybe lazily so, but, you know, he's won a league final. He's won a Leinster final. He got them to the All-Ireland. And he's back in the Leinster final again. Who say he won't win it again? So, you know, he's adapting to the modern game. There's no doubt about it for Brian Cody.
Yeah, look, Owen Cody, I'd agree with that as well. Like Brian was saying, 1-5. I mean, it's brilliant. He's 20 years of age. I mean, it's incredible out of him. But, you know, what I saw from him, not even like that the scores were just popping to him. He really worked really hard for the scores. And when he got them, like one score we haven't even talked about was the one where he kind of danced across the 65. He was somehow out there and he just pushed the man off, turned back onto his left side and stuck it over. And then once he stuck it over, he turned and shouted at lads, "Come on, we're going again." And even after the goal, after every score, he was turning, shouting at lads, shouting at TJ Reid, shouting at lads around him. And I was just saying, like, this is a mature performance. And just from playing with him, having him in the dressing room and seeing him, he has an excellent attitude. He just comes in and, you know, coming from a fellow who played with Ballyhale, been surrounded by great hurlers all the years, Young Hurler of the Year, you know, some people might fault a fella or wouldn't fault a fella if his feet come off the ground. His feet are planted on the ground, this fella. And he's great attitude. So look, I mean, as a Kilkenny supporter, it's just great to see this going forward.
Did you know he was as good in the air? Or is that known in Kilkenny? I didn't know he would be able to pluck balls like that.
He would be, yeah. I just think that the ball that he's been supplied over a long time, like he would have been feeding off lads like Colin Finlay and Mick Finlay and these lads. So maybe we haven't seen that as much, but he is, or maybe he's worked on it a small bit. It isn't something he is noted for, I suppose, is the high catching, but I think he caught two or three great balls the weekend, which is, look, again, if he is working on it, I mean, it's another string to his bow, you know?
Yeah, no, it definitely is. One other thing, just before we go off this match, Brian, I loved how sneaky he was for his goal. He just took the chance that Liam Ryan might mess that up, and he did mess it up. Like, I mean, he's like, okay, I might be decent in the air, but I'm not going up with him. That would be stupid. I might just take a chance, and it worked out.
Yeah, but look, I think that's the poacher's finish in any good good forward. You have to take chances like that. And if you don't, sometimes those goals, current opportunities don't come to you. But then the other side of it is, if Liam Ryan had caught that, he was going to be it because he was letting Liam Ryan go up on his own. But so look, it's a fine line sometimes. We often talked about Woolley in this show as well about breaking ball. Sometimes they go for you, sometimes they don't. And as a forward, sometimes you just have to take those chances and they pay off. And I think that's exactly what happened the other day.
Yeah, exactly. Right, so Dublin caused the shock of the weekend. I don't think anybody saw this one coming except for Conal Keeney, but he always tips Dublin. So maybe a clock is just a stop clock is right, yeah. Or whatever that saying it is. Like, the whole question we were asking here, Paul, last week is, how can Dublin stop this Galway attack? It's so potent. Mm. It's so versatile. It's very hard to plan for because they're always moving around. Yeah. So how did they do it? Just with Burke as the sweeper? Is this how? Or yeah. Just brilliant defending?
Well, they just seemed to pull back. Matty Kenny said it afterwards. He recognised that, you know, in the interview afterwards, that Galway obviously have a very strong attack. And I suppose they were coming into the match knowing that their performance had been, or performances in the league, you know, they haven't really done anything of great note within the league. But so they sat right back. But what they kind of, again, is what we're talking about, of Galway kind of had to pull up on them because they were using the channels, they were working up through the channels and seemed to be getting scores from there. Danny Sutcliffe was again getting on balls, kind of the old Danny Sutcliffe we used to see.
Yeah.
And as a result, then Dublin kind of had to step up on them. But there was, I think there was even a little bit more to it. There was this aggression that we kind of missed in Dublin over the last while. Dublin are a huge confidence team. Any team, like let's say the Conal was in or any of these, they went ahead with you, they were up in your face, and they were a great team not to let a lead slip. You know, they'd always be up in your face and drive it on. And we kind of saw a bit of that in them. We saw a serious fight. Chris Crummie got on a lot of ball and won a few frees, and there was that aggression then again. And it seemed to be all over the pitch. Again, I think there's been a few things over the last week again that has probably galvanised them as a team. And I think they saw this really as an opportunity. I would always say that, like, Galway in 2012 probably caught us on the hop in the Leinster final, because maybe our head wasn't completely focused on the match. Not the match, but we were going up to often play a game. They were going up to win a game. That's the way we were often describe it. Maybe Galway were a little bit caught here. They hadn't played in 3 weeks. Maybe saw Dublin's form in the league, and maybe they were just that 1% off, whereas Dublin came in playing a game that we hadn't seen out of Dublin in the league, and they just absolutely put the foot down. Galway went for scores far too, well, goals maybe far too early. But having said that, Alan Nolan created a platform for Dublin in the match. If those went in, you'd nearly say Galway probably would have went on and won the match. But Alan Nolan, like the old kind of war dog, saved the balls, and then Dublin went up the other end, got the scores, and I think a confidence build in Dublin then, and maybe a little bit of unsure insecureness or whatever it was in Galway, they kind of got a little bit rattled, you know. Yeah. But Dublin were full value, and it was the kind of the old Dublin we've seen over the last few years.
Was there an element of overconfidence with Galway, Brian, to be going for those goals? Like, would they have been saying in the Galway dressing room, let's stick in a few goals early and put this to bed? Like, was it unusual for Joe to go for the goal from the free? Obviously, the goal chances from play, you'd say, are fair enough.
Yeah, I thought the goal chance from the free, he should have tapped over. And I know you can counter-argue that. It's the first minute of the game. You have 21-yard free, take your opportunity. But when you're just a little bit left of centre of the goal, I just think it's one of those ones where you just tap it over. I think Conor Cooney was probably the one, unless he mishit it. You know, he rounded his man, and it looked like he should have just tapped it over the bar. His shot went quite low. It looked like it was a low trajectory. It was blocked down. I think it was Shane Cooney came across and blocked it down. But, it looked that he spurned an easy point-taking opportunity and went for a goal. So those sort of things, you know, they obviously build confidence in Dublin. And the fact that even when Joe got a couple of 65s, he didn't nail them. All those things just add huge confidence to Dublin. And it was amazing. It was like, it was either 6 or 8 minutes old, the game was old, before Dublin actually scored. So Galway had done all the hurling, all the pressing, all the attacking, and had nothing to show for it. And Dublin got down the field and got their first point. And, you know, after the 18 minutes, it was 6-1 for the water break. Dublin probably only had about 6 or 7 attacks, but they scored every single time they went up the field. I'd say possession-wise, Galway were totally in command. But it just allowed that the Dublin players on the day to grow in confidence. And we all know, any team that we've been involved in, if your confidence gets up, your gander gets up, and you just start attacking balls and winning balls, and they just look ravenous after that. And I know Shane O'Neill was a little bit touchy afterwards in an interview with Off the Ball, where he was a bit kind of offended to maybe say that Galway weren't as hungry as Dublin. But Galway obviously were up for the game, wanted to win it, but it's the body language, it's the demeanour of the Dublin players. They just looked mad up for it, and they attacked everything as if their lives depend on it. It looked more like the Galway, as you said, were intent on putting them away early, and then when that didn't start to work out, it was, you know, they were working through their process and the game plan that they were trying to play. Whereas Dublin, while they had all that right, they also had a huge work rate and huge intensity, and they just maintained that for the 70 minutes. The other side of it is, it doesn't matter who you are, and we've seen this, like Galway are one of the favourites to Ireland. If you miss loads of chances and your confidence starts to dip, it's very, very hard to turn that around. I keep saying it on this show and many shows, it's the beauty of hurling. Things like this can happen.
Yeah, no, well, nobody really saw it coming. I was actually driving home. I was listening to a lot of this on the radio, and then when I got in home, I was kind of taken aback at how comfortable Dublin were in the closing minutes. And Galway were hitting it down to Rush and Burke or whoever was sweeping. And it's just like this. Like usually you think Dublin, Jesus, backs will be to the wall now, nerves. There was none of that, was there?
No, there was none of it. And you could see it all over the pitch, you know, when we were there on Saturday. It was just, they were completely in control. They were completely in control. And like Brian was saying, they had a huge confidence. Wherever they were working the ball out, the ball would go into the full back line. Al Nolan would get it. And he'd look out and out to the side. He had players looking for it. And they'd slowly work it up the line. And then we saw incidences out there where, like, Danny Sutcliffe got a ball one-on-one with Dahi Burke. And he just ran at him. Quick little sidestep. And from probably, I think it was the 65, not too far from the sideline, over the bar. And that just, I think, you know, just showed like how confident Dublin were on the day. And it didn't wilt, you know, like you're saying, it didn't wilt coming down the final stretch. If anything, their confidence, it's like they smelled blood. Their confidence built. And even like the Oisin O'Rourke goal, it's the Chris Crummy goal, but you could see Oisin O'Rourke, you know, when you're not confident, those things don't really come off. He got the ball turned, looked across and stuck a ball to Chris Crummy. And Chris Crummy still had a lot to do with that set. He had to control it. The angle was hard and he buried it. Now, some would say maybe those are the things that go for you the days that you're, you know, the luck is in. But that, I think that showed the mindset of Dublin at the time. They were confident and they were, you know, when you're confident, you think these things will work. This will happen. I'll get this ball across, even though there's Galway players between me and Chris Crummy. But they,
Brilliant pass by O'Rourke, wasn't
brilliant,
it?
Brilliant.
You love seeing a ball like that.
Well, that was it. You know, he got the head up. He was under pressure and he didn't panic. Could have went for his point. We saw lots of points scored from that position at the weekend. But no, just got the head up. And also as well, Chris Crummy gave him the option. He was sprinting through the centre.
Yeah.
And that shows Chris Crummy's and Dublin's attitude, that they were going, even though he was out to the side, I'm going to give a man an option here. And if teams aren't confident or the confidence is low, players don't make them runs. They just, look, I'll let him sort this out. I'll let him get the score. But Dublin were barreling forward. And I think there was another man off Chris Crummy's shoulder. Then again, it could have been Sutcliffe or someone. So, look, they had loads of options. And I think that reflected the confidence they were playing with.
Exhibit number two, Brian, was a goal on when Oisin O'Rourke had the ball in his hand.
No,
I'm leading up to something here, lad.
Building. You're touching on something. I don't know what you're it touching.
Touches, yeah. Yeah, and you're saving me in this one. No, it definitely wasn't. But do you know what made that goal, though? Ronan Hayes' movement, our full forward, Pull Garrod McInerney out of the danger zone and created that space and turned the Galway half-back line back towards their own goal, which we all know half-backs hate. And as Paul said, the two Dublin players were sprinting into that open ground, and it was a great goal. And they could have had another couple of goals. I think I'm going to wrong someone here. Was that right? I think it was Rory McBride went through with a ball and should have thrown it into Ronan Hayes, who was all on his own in the centre. And you would expect him to finish one-on-one, but he elected to shoot, and it was a poor mistake there from that perspective. And then Murphy made a great save just prior to that as well. So Dublin had opened them up, you know, that two or three times in that second half. So eventually just they worked one of them, and Chris Crummy took it really, really well, because Aina Murphy met it hard on him. You know, he forced him out very, very wide. And Chris Crummy showed a lot of, composure to actually finish that to the back of the net. You wouldn't think he was a back for most of his life.
No, he's well able to score a goal. I mean, he scored a brilliant goal against Galway a couple of years ago when they beat him in Parnell Park from wing
back. That's not to be underestimated as well, Willie. The fact that they have beaten Galway in big games. So, you know, Dublin no more than, I suppose, most teams. When you feel you can beat a team, you know, and they've done it before, you know, you love it. And you love when you're being written off so much as well. And remember, they had that game played against Antrim the week before where they were kind of half written off as well. And they were hugely impressive. I was up at that game in Navan and they were hugely impressive that day. So, you know, this Dublin team, they have a lot of experience. And one line I have to give huge credit to is their full back line. They're animals. The pace of the three of them, they're so well built. they're like models, the size of their arms and shoulders and the pace of the three of them. It's a pity Sean O'Donnell get injured. Like, those boys flying out the balls, they make it so difficult to anyone. You'd be hoping that O'Donnell will get back in time, but he has had these injury problems over the last number of years, but they will need him if they're going to rattle Kilkenny.
Conall Keeney was making that exact point, that Dublin don't fear Galway at all. They like playing them, and remember him and Damien Hayes arguing. Damien says, yeah, but that was a really good team you played on, Conall. This isn't a good Dublin team. Like, we didn't see it coming, but this is redemption for Matty Kenny, because I've been very critical of Matty Kenny on the show here, and like, I'd say rightly so, and pundits have been too, but this is a huge, huge win. He needed this. Like, he was in danger of going out with a whimper, because he's probably finished after this year.
Yeah, like, well, to be fair, you know, if you're criticising Matty Kenny over the last while, I mean, he hasn't done a huge amount. Like, we were talking the last few weeks that, do Dublin know what they want to do? Do they know what their exact 15 is? What are they about? And whatever they've done in the last while, like the Antrim match and the match at the weekend against Galway, I mean, they just seem to be a completely different team, and they really know what they're about. Whether it's they've gone back to basics, whether I don't know what it is, but they're not the same team that was playing in the league. So, you know, based on the reflection in the league, it was fair to say that, you know, what is Matty Kenny doing? What's his game plan? Again, he has redeemed himself, and fair play to him. Look, Matty Kenny, he's a great hurling man, and he's had great years with Coolan and Galway as well. And look, in fairness, he stuck at it. He stuck at it really hard. And I'm sure he enjoyed the last few days of not having the pressure on him, or maybe, you know, people talking about what are Dublin about. You know, it was a great victory. And you even saw the Dublin team coming off the pitch at the weekend. You know, there was a great Dublin crowd there as well. And I'm sure they enjoyed that as well, because they would have been feeling the pressure over the last while. But, you know, Matty Kenny deserves full credit after the weekend. He had him set up really well. And like, you couldn't fault him in anywhere on the pitch. So, you know, fair play to him. He deserves all the credit this weekend. We can't get on to him this week.
We definitely can't. And he admitted after the game, he said, we set up very, very defensively. We had to. We stayed defensively solid, and we stuck to the process. I'll forgive him for saying that. And we kept coming out with that ball. We used the ball well, kept the scoreboard ticking over, and worked some really good scores. And I suppose that's it. Setting up very defensively, fighting for every ball. Like, the players clearly still want to play for him, Brian.
Yeah, they do. And look, they set up where they maximise everything. As you said, they're sitting back defensively. Liam Rush gone back centre back. Now, he was really troubled by Neil McManus the week before. Neil McManus got 6 points from play off him. But, you know, Liam Rush stayed sitting in the pocket. And I suppose, you know, from a Dublin perspective, he probably and Matty Kenny maybe looked at maybe the midfield and half forward line weren't covering enough there to allow Neil McManus that room and space to snipe 6 points. But to be fair to Neil, he did take on Liam Rush a couple of times and cause him trouble. But look, Liam Rush learned from it, and he put in a hell of a performance at the weekend, sitting in that pocket. But Donald Burke, you know, he wears 11, but he plays anywhere bar 11, because he's out roaming around that middle third and getting onto great ball. And the Dublin players give him the ball every time they see him, and he sprays it around, and he pops up for a couple of points in play as well. And Danny Sutcliffe has just rolled back the years. He was excellent against Antrim. He was excellent against Galway. His ability to win high ball is obviously massive. Same with Chris Crummy. So they're able to go route one. Same with Ronan Hayes. He's only thinking of goals every single time he gets the ball. And Keane O'Sullivan has added a little bit to it as well. He's very consistent. You know, they have good players, and they came on. You know, Oisin O'Rourke came on. Fergal Whiteley came on. But they, at times, have been inconsistent for Dublin, whereas maybe Keane O'Sullivan has, maybe just these couple of games anyway, has offered that consistency. So it's mad. There was a big hit on Keane Boland. He went off concussed. So he's another man that they'll be hoping to get back, because his energy is huge, and that's what allows it allows the likes of those other players to get around, and at least creates that two-man full forward line for them as well. So Dublin, they've a lot of players that maybe have been inconsistent over the last couple of years, but they've a lot of guys that have been consistently playing inter-county hurling at a high level, and have been exposed to it. And, you know, as we already said, when they don't fear this this Galway team, and the way the game, the pattern of the game and how it had happened, you look at it now in hindsight, which obviously all was 2020 vision, you can see how this actually happened.
Yeah, you can't obviously after, nobody saw it. You couldn't see it last Thursday. You just couldn't. Like, I mean, it's crazy. What about Joe Canning? Like, I mean, he had a very bad day at the office. We talked last Thursday that he was about to pass out Henry Shefflin. Would that have played it? Joe's played in such huge games that I'm sure that that wouldn't have affected his performance, or could it?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it had anything to do with it, to be honest. I mean, Joe has lived with us. I mean, I've known the name of Joe Canning since I was 14 or 15, and he's only a year older than me. Like, but I mean, he's dealt with this pressure the whole way up. I wouldn't say he probably knew about it. I'm sure maybe someone reminded him of it, all right. But no, I don't think it had any effect on it. I think it was just really Dublin kind of stifled him a small bit. When he got his chances, you know, he hit the few wides and he had the goal chance stopped. Maybe the confidence just dipped a small bit then. And, you know, but oftentimes I think we turn and we look at Joe Canning a bit too much, you know, when he has set the standards for himself. And sometimes when, you know, he makes a few bad decisions or he hits a few wides, people turn around and, you know, when Galway aren't going well or Joe Canning isn't going well, we turn on Joe Canning. But there were a lot of other players who didn't show up as much as him either, you know, but probably because he hit the wides, he was a bit wasteful in that way.
Yeah, six wides, yeah. And 9 shots at the goal that didn't return anything.
Yeah, so in fairness it was, but it was a bad day at the office for him. But there was other Galway players again who didn't show too strongly. We kind of turn on Joe a small bit too much, but he'll know he had a bad performance himself at the weekend. And look, if Galway came out of there with a win at the weekend, I don't think we'd be talking about it maybe as much. But it was a bad performance. But look, players have bad performances. He was trying his best, hit the few wides. Just one of those days, I'd put it down to.
Yeah, okay. Performance of the weekend, we'll give it to James Madden, who was outstanding in the game and had to bury his father the day before the game. So incredible mental strength for him to be able to play in Croke Park. It's always, you always hear of these players, like, I mean, I've nothing but admiration for them, Brian, how they can do it. I'm not sure I'd be able to do it. And, you know, it's what his father would have wanted, but that doesn't make it any easier. You know, the week he would have had to put in there and preparing for a game mentally, physically, and to be able to go out and perform. Like I said, he's a tougher man than me because I don't think I'd be able to do it.
No, and emotionally, I suppose, is the word there.
You'd be drained, I suppose.
Drained and just, you know, intercounty hurling can be emotional in its own way. I'm sure you can all attest to that as well. You know, there's a lot of pressure on, a lot of internal pressure players can put on themselves as well. And just to add all in that, you know, now, you know, Matty Kenny spoke really well afterwards in his interview and talked about how supportive, you know, James's dad was of him and would have wanted him to play. So, look, obviously, James then was extremely determined, and I'm sure his mother and sister were very supportive of him from that perspective. And look, it not that it makes it any easier, but I suppose when you're getting their support and they're just willing you, sometimes life is a funny way of working out for them, and you're just so glad for him on a personal level.
Yeah,
you know, I didn't know about it prior to the game, but it's something that you'd be just, you know, you'd be so glad that he actually did win, that he did play well, because you know, hurling's great. It's like Jurgen Klopp said about soccer, it's the most important of non-important things, you know. So it's great that, you know, he had the really good day in Croke Park on the big stage so soon after his dad being buried. So it's you know, full testament to him. And he'd go back after that game on a high, but then, you know, I'm sure he was emotional in the dressing room afterwards. When just, you know, when you slow down and starts to kind of really sink in the enormity of what's just happened.
Yeah, absolutely. So fantastic stuff, James Madden. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back with the Munster games. All right, so Clare and Tipperary, lads, and there is only one place to start here, right? So, like, I mean, this was it was just a dreadful, dreadful decision. And the pity thing about this is that obviously the Owen Murphy decision in Croke Park didn't affect Kilkenny, but Kilkenny knew they deserved that, you know. But Clare felt so hard done by a call in hurling to be given a penalty away for a foul on the corner of the 14 and sideline. Yeah. Like, explain how, what could he have been thinking? James Owens.
Yeah.
Kilkenny's mate.
Yeah, great friend. I think everyone's just baffled by it. When I saw it initially, you know, I was watching it, I've no skin in the game in terms of Clare and Tip. The frustration I felt as a player watching it, I just went, this can't be happening. Like, I mean, you train too much for something like this to happen. You invest too much time, you commit too much for something to be taken from you like this. And that's what happened, and make no bones about it. Like we were talking with Claire a few weeks ago, bet by Antrim, and they tried to pull it back over the next few weeks. They had the COVID cases again, and people are talking about Brian Lowen and the panel, and suddenly they seem to be in a good place, and they were playing brilliantly. And then suddenly this happens and completely takes the wind out of her sails, pulls the rug from under them. I just felt so frustrated. And I was actually saying to myself, so why am I so angry? Like, I mean, why am I so annoyed over this? It was just because that, you know, I felt aggrieved for the Clare players that this had happened, you know.
So they must have felt that too. And maybe their head scrambled, you know, momentarily. They lost, I think, 2-4 to a pint. They lost the next
2-4 to a pint. And there were so many things with it. There was a case of, you know, we talked about Aaron Shanahan's, you know, that was a penalty. You know, Cathal Barrett was lucky to stay on. He was on a yellow card at this stage. He came out on Tony Kelly. Tony Kelly was about 2 or 3 yards in front of him, and he went to flick the ball, in fairness, but he hit Tony Kelly a fair stroke. Now, it was a free in, but if I was back on a yellow card at that stage, I'd be kind of saying, oh God, I'm in trouble here. Now, Cathal Barrett went down after it. I presume he was trying to think that James Owens mightn't think that he was actually, that maybe he was injured or whatever, but to distract from it. But there were so many decisions there that I went, if I was a Clare player, I'd be just so frustrated, you know. And going home from it, I mean, you'd be just thinking, what do we have to do here? You know, we were in the best position we could possibly could be. And it was one of the worst calls I've seen. And it's not to pile everything up on James Owens, but you have to be responsible for what you've done. It was a terrible decision, and it could completely derail Clare. You hope it doesn't, but it could completely derail Clare's chances of winning, you know, an All-Ireland, which they're hoping to do.
Yeah, you were at the game, doing the game with RT, Brian. Like, I mean, what was the atmosphere like after that?
Yeah, it was weird because Tip knew they got away with one. Jason Ford took the penalty really well and stuck it and all that. But, you know, Sheedy then obviously did as he should do. He got really behind these players and got them to drive it on for those 10 minutes. And, you know, they made hay while the sun was shining, and they got lucky with the second goal. Poor Ever in the goal just obviously made a mistake. His arms got caught. Being a left-handed hurler, he just couldn't get his hurl across in time, and I really felt for him from that situation, because that's the harshness of playing in a goal, one simple mistake like that, and it's just a huge blow to Clare from that perspective. So, but they clearly, as you said, they didn't deal with the penalty situation really well mentally, and they really felt aggrieved. And look, to play devil's advocate here, the irony of this is they got a very, very contentious penalty the week before against Waterford, and they were very happy to take it, and they drove on, and they made hay at that stage, and they got a good few scores when Shane Fives was off the field against Waterford last week. So, you know, it just, maybe that's something that Clare, and I'm not trying to say it wasn't the right decision, it was the right decision, it was a completely wrong decision. I'm just saying it's something that maybe Clare could maybe learn from, the fact that if these big calls go against you, you can't let it affect you so much on the field of play, because it really did suck the life out of them. And it wasn't really till the last 10 minutes that they really threw the kitchen sink in it. They scored the last 5 points without reply, but you know, like, Tipperary had almost pulled away at that stage. You know, they were gone 9 points up. It just looked like the game was petering out, and it was such a pity, because right up to that 37th minute, the game was a humdinger. The crowd, even though it was 3,000, it was electric down there, and it was brilliant. It was just real Munster hurling at its finest, and I was loving it, being caught up in the moment of it all. And it just was such a pity that such a game was essentially ruined by such a decision. Like, you can see on Twitter over the last, you know, we'll say 18-20 hours, there's been such contention over it. You know, like, some people are trying to say by letter of the law it was a penalty because it was inside the 21, but it's such a subjective call. Like, if you look at the wording of the rule book, it doesn't say clear and it doesn't say obvious goal scoring, it just says a goal scoring opportunity.
Yeah,
and that leaves it open to interpretation, and I suppose that's unfortunately how James Owens interpreted it. Now, Brian Lowen did say in his interview, he's maybe the only one in the Gaelic grounds that interpreted it as a goal-scoring opportunity. And I tend to agree with Brian Lowen on that one. I couldn't see it as being a goal-scoring opportunity. But it is unfortunate that you know, it's all the kind of negativity that's going on James Owens, because he made a bad decision, and it had such a bearing on the outcome. But just to touch on the rule for a second, I just think this rule was introduced to stop the cynical fouling. You know, the ones where there's a pull down, a drag, like the Owen Murphy one, yeah. You know, where they clearly stopped the goal scoring opportunity. Not what we saw with you know, where Jake Morris was pulled down. Not where we saw Peter Casey for Limerick and Cork. Not what we saw last week with Cheyenne Fives and Aaron Sharner. I don't think they were cynical pull downs. They were clumsy tackles. They were poor tackles. They were all maybe yellow cards. Maybe Peter Casey's was dubious if it was a yellow card, but they were definitely frees. There was no doubt about it. But there weren't cynical pull downs. And for me, that's what the rule was brought in to actually nullify in the game.
Well, that's the thing. So, like, I mean, I know Don Logue, I was watching the Sunday game last night. He was like, we all make mistakes and et cetera, and he has to be given a break. But this was just a mistake on such a horrific level that I don't think he does deserve a break, because it's not good enough as an inter-county referee. It was so obvious that it was over in the corner. And OK, it was a trip, but it was a rash rush of blood to the head, and it was maybe a yellow card. But because it was so far to the sideline, like, the debate really shouldn't be there. And Cathal Malone was covering. Mm. So we know now, looking up obviously the rules, where the foul occurred, referee needs to look at. Nothing there. How many defenders are between the attacker and the goals? Cathal Malone was clearly between him. And you could see that on the camera. So yeah. James Owens can see that. And there was a 2-on-2 inside, right? Then could another defender make a tackle before reaching the goals? Yes, yeah. Cathal Malone. And how many players are in the area in front of the goals? That's a bit like the one of the previous ones. Mm. So there's no, under no instance of the four kind of factors you need to look at,
yeah,
should this have been called a penalty? Like, yeah, James Owens has history of being in the limelight. Like, I mean, is he a type of referee who's looking at that now from yesterday and has kind of quite enjoyed being in the limelight? I don't know, like, because everyone talks about him. Everybody has the same opinion of him. Mm. And here he is making a call that nobody can understand.
Yeah, this is the thing. Look, I don't know James Owens at all. But like you said there, if it was a free that, you know, as we are turning back and people talk of the letter of the law and all these, there is no letter of the law as far as this is concerned, because it's not black and white. It's impossible, really, interpretations. It depends on what people think is a free. But James Owens himself, look, I don't know him, but it's the consistency again, you know, as players, as managers, as whatever. You know, you're held accountable for what you do on a pitch, and you're dropped, and you're sent off if you make a rash decision. And unfortunately for James Owens, he's been very inconsistent as far as I could see across games, and which is the situation. And look, again, I think we want referees to be consistent across the board, you know. But if Clare and Tip had Fergal Horgan yesterday, it would have been a completely different match, you know. And I think that in itself isn't good enough. But again, I wouldn't like to gang up on the fella in terms of James Owens and gang up on him in terms of heaping all this pressure on him. But at the same time, this is something he has to be responsible for and stand over and say that, either defend it or don't defend it. And I would say also in the situation, explain it to players. I didn't see him explaining to anyone yesterday.
Well, he's not that type of referee.
And he's
he,
not. Though? No, he's not. And from what my experience of him on the pitch, he doesn't explain it. Like, you know, if I would have dealt with any referee before, and we'll use Fergal Horgan. You know, Fergal would talk to you and he'd say, you know, Paul, you slapped down on a fella there, you grabbed him or whatever. And you might be annoyed at the time, but you know you've done it, and you know you explain, and you know what he's saying to you and what he saw. But what can be very frustrating for players when this is not explained to you and a referee just walks away and you're there, you know, the tackle itself. I mean, we've talked about it 100 times. It was clumsy. And as Brian was saying, it's not what the rule was brought in for. It was a full-blooded tackle, really, if anything. And it was clumsy. He slid in and he... But it wasn't a cynical tackle. You know, he wanted to go in. He was after coming out with the ball. He lost the ball.
Yeah.
He was fighting back for the ball and he jumped.
He was annoyed, yeah.
And you could see even when he fouled him, he was going, oh yeah, I fouled him and I knew it. And then obviously something was said to him that you're going to the line, and you could see him reacting going, oh, you're joking me, you know. But as for James Owens, look, I can't comment on in terms of what his thinking was or what, is he aggrieved after doing it? Is he feeling guilty? Does he realise what he's done? I can't comment on that. But there is certainly a consistency, which I think has to be, you know, there has to be accountability for. We saw Alan Kelly a few years ago, unfortunately, Tip and Watford, where the ball, his umpire said it was a goal. Austin Gleeson caught it on the line. They said it was a goal. Alan Kelly wasn't accountable there because it was umpire called it. He couldn't see it. But I think Alan Kelly kind of felt the repercussions of that for a few games afterwards. Probably didn't get the big games, which I felt would have been harsh because excellent referee. But here we have a situation that, are we going to be in an All-Ireland semi-final or an All-Ireland final where one of these decisions is going to come again if James Owens, and you know, I'm not saying James Owen shouldn't referee anymore. Of course not. You know, he does have excellent days.
A Joe McDonagh Cup for a few years.
But no, but just what I'm saying is that, you know, is there accountability? What's the process here of in terms of, you know, because if I was a Clare team going back out, and as Brian Lowen said yesterday, he feels aggrieved because David McInerney was sent off last year. And then here's another instance. So if Clare face again, is there an explanation given to them? I think they do deserve an explanation in this regard. But look, we're all held accountable as players, as managers at the top level. Referees are no different. And unfortunately, this is a period now where James Owens has to be accountable and has to possibly explain himself as to what the decision was. And even if he says, look, I made a bad decision, I think that would actually explain a lot of it. He goes, look, I made a bad decision. I think people will go, yeah, actually, that's understandable.
Forgiven,
fair play,
then, yeah.
You're forgiven. But I think doing nothing about it is, it leaves people, you know, in the lurch, and they're going, what is the situation here?
Yeah, they generally don't come out and speak. I'll make a case that James Owens obviously made a horrific call, and anyone that thought there was a goal scoring opportunity there, you know, and like, I mean, I'm kind of messing with you lads as I'm building up to stuff like Walter Walsh's goal, like Oisin Rourke. Did James Owen think that Jake Morris would continue his run there? Cathal Malone would have come to him. He would have cut back inside. Remember, like Cathal Mannion did against Tipperary. I think that was in the same ground there in the All-Ireland quarterfinal last year, whatever, in the qualifiers, and bury it in the goals. Like, is he thinking Jake Morris is that good? And that's a huge problem then with the rule, Brian, because what James Owen thinks might continue on there might have nothing like the reality of what might happen.
Yeah, and that is. Essentially, look, the call was wrong. Look, I'm not going to try and defend the call, right? Just to clarify. But it is the problem with the rule as well, the wording of it. It is subjective. But I suppose all penalty decisions are subjective, because essentially the other end, and this is why Clare really maybe triply felt aggrieved, was the contentious non-penalty down the other end where Aaron Shanahan and Barry Heffernan were wrestling, and it looked like, you know, the final one left with Barry Heffernan pulling down Aaron Shanahan. So, you know, Clare felt aggrieved down that end. They felt they should have got a penalty. So it's a tough one. I think it does come back to the fact that none of these decisions are ever explained. Whether it's the referee themselves, whether it's the referee assessor or whatever, but they don't seem to come out and defend referees. And I don't think they're doing justice to the referees as a result, because they're making their job ultimately harder. And obviously the general public, the media, everyone, the players, everyone invested in the game, you know, are just left scratching their heads, you know, and it's that inconsistency. The bit that maybe threw me in relation to the whole thing is, did he consult his linesman, you know? Did the other linesman, you know, essentially there's three inter-county referees there, you know? They have a fourth official as well. There's four inter-county referees there, you know? I'm not sure if the fourth official can intervene in that situation. But, you know, he can have a quiet word, say maybe, hey, chat to your linesman here. You know, I'm not sure if this is the right decision. You know, all the umpires are hooked up as well. There's enough officials there between them all to get it right. It really, in this day and age, is shutting all befallen on James Owens to make that decision. You know, we've muted the idea of two referees and all this sort of thing before, Woody. But, you know, as I said, there's enough of them there between them all to try and get that decision right. James Owens took the autonomy and made that decision himself. But again, we don't know. And I suppose we're left scratching our heads, wondering what happened, why did it happen? And ultimately, when it's such a bad call as it was the other day, that's what leads to the utter frustration. And not just for Clare people. You have to, and I think Paul said this, it's not just Clare people who feel aggrieved over this. Obviously, they feel it more because they're invested in it, but all hurling people feel aggrieved over this one.
Yeah, you'd be worried if it happens in a big game. There's no doubt about that. What about Tip in general, Paul? Did they concede kick-outs?
No kick-outs, yes.
They concede puck-outs. Their match-ups with Barrett and Kelly was interesting. Heffernan and Shanahan and Bubbles out in Conlon. That was more predictable because they've put Bubbles out there before.
Yeah, at the start, I suppose, kind of a rocky start. You know, Ian Galvin inside caused serious problems. Yeah. 7 minutes gone, he got
for
one.
For Paddy Maher, was it?
Yeah, for Paddy Maher. But then, in fairness to Paddy Maher, you know, and after maybe 13-15 minutes in around there, he actually came out with a few balls then, and Ian Galvin wasn't in the match as much. I thought they actually brought out Ian Galvin, where they were getting great results off him inside. I would have left him inside there, but like that, in fairness now, Sheedy, you know, he got his matchups right, bringing Bubbles out on Conlon. I don't think he started in that position, but he drifted out there, and you know, in fairness, Bubbles got on great ball out there. Seamus Callanan had, you know, a really great game popping off balls to lads, and he did a few bits of skill there. I think I saw someone had it up there that he actually kicked the ball up to himself at one stage. I think he was popping it off for Bubbles or Jason Ford, got a point or someone off it before he handed it
Jason
to him.
Jason Ford, he was just falling on the ground.
And even before that, he kicked the ball up to himself. But, you know, Tip in general, Tip were sharp. And, you know, in fairness, they got to grips with the game very well. And look, there's nothing to say they wouldn't have went on and won it anyway. Certainly not. But, you know, they were looking good. And in fairness, they do have great options coming off the bench as well. But, you know, I think Sheedy's coming really good now at the moment in terms of knowing which team he wants to play. And he does have great options there as well. But I think especially bringing Shamie Callanan back in and having him in at full forward, like, he's just a great man to have in there at full forward, because it's nearly a case of, it's like Bonner Maher at centre forward. The rest of the lads can play around him, because, you know, that position is taken care of. So if you have to move your Bubbles Dwyer into corner forward, or move him out to wing forward, or whatever you want to do. Likewise, in fairness, Kyle Barrett had a great game on Tony Kelly. Again, Tony Kelly wasn't really in it in the first few minutes, came into it and still came out the first half, I think, at 1-3. But in fairness, Kyle Barrett had a very good game on him. But, you know, again, Mikey Breen, I think we've talked about a lot of times, you know, there's times there where he doesn't start for Tip. I always think he does bring something to Tipperary.
Yeah, me too.
And he has great running in him, and he just runs these lines, and he doesn't slow down. He just runs and he runs. And the goal, brilliant goal. He just kept running, flicked it out in front of himself.
How hard was that to do? He's running so fast and the ball's kind of stuck, to knock it ahead, but not too far and not too... You know, not enough, if you know what I mean.
I've never been that close to a goal in an attacking form, so Brian might tell you. But no, it was. And the fact that his first touch was important, just to get it out in front of him, but then just to steady himself and get a good connection and keep it on the ground. Like, great piece of skill out of him. But yeah, look, Tip are looking sharp. It's a pity we're not talking about Tip here as being the main focus of attention. But they were, in fairness, and like that, even when they got the man advantage, I think Tip are probably the best team in the country at when they go a man up, or let's say if the other team lose a man, they're really good. They know straight away what they want to do. And they got 2-4 in 10 minutes, which, like Brian was saying, that if a decision goes against you for Clare where you don't lose the focus and you have to keep going... Tip, likewise. Tip didn't pay any attention to what was after happening. They just put the foot down and they said, make advantage of this. 2-4, kill the game off. And, you know, even after that, you could just see that the confidence was building with Tip. So in fairness, they were looking sharp. And I think they'll be quite happy now that, you know, they're after coming away from a weekend after beating a very good Clare team. But there's no one talking about Tip really, because the focus is on everything else. Maybe the focus is on Kilkenny, Wexford and Dublin after winning. So Tip are in a really good position now going into the Munster final. So, like, you know, in fairness to them, they were very strong the weekend, and I think they're happy with the position they're in at the moment.
The Tony Kelly goal, Brian, I wrote it down because it was such a great move. It went from Flanagan to Paddy Fitz, from Paddy Fitz into Hayes, to Conlon, long to Shanahar. Heffernan blocked him, and then Ian Galvin jumped on a ball he had no right to win, showed great determination and courage, and it popped up to Kelly and a bullet. And at that stage you're thinking, Jesus, this is a real game on here. Now I know, look, we know what happened then straight away, and maybe the game was ruined. Like, how would, like, maybe even talk us through that Kelly goal, and how would you have seen it when you were sitting at half time? What were you thinking?
Yeah, I think it was David Reedy actually got the last flick. It was him.
Oh, was it? I thought it was Ian Galvin.
Yeah, but it was amazing, because the movement, you know, again, you don't see these things in camera, but the movement of Aaron Shanahar for that was phenomenal. And he lost Barry Heffernan. He had good 20 yards on him. But this is probably the chink in Aaron Shanahar's armour, is that he's not ruthless enough for those situations. And I know it worked out for Clare because they got the goal out of it, but he really should have had that ball over the bar. And Barry Heffernan, I suppose it also attests to the fact that he's about 6'2" or 6'3", big long reach, got a half block on Aaron Shanahar. And as you said, look, I'm nearly certain it was David Reedy got the flick off. We'll whoever it was anyway, got it into Kelly, and he just turned and laced it into net. And the stadium shook. It was unbelievable. It was a brilliant finish to the first half. Because it had ebbed and flowed, as we said, they both had their periods of dominance, and the goals, I suppose, were having such a major impact on who was in front. And it was brilliant. And the Clare crowd really got behind their players going off the field, and the Clare players sprinted off. So it was huge, and was really set up, as you said, for that second half. And Clare started brightly, got the free. Tony Kelly won a free straight away, and, you know, pointed that, and it was all looking good. As you said, it all came a cropper. But look, I suppose I have to probably hammer that home. That's something that Clare need to learn from as well, because Kilkenny, even though the Wharton obviously is aggrieved giving away the penalty, you would have said when Kilkenny went down to 14 men in extra time against a team that's, you know, supposed to have such superior fitness in them than Wexford, you know, you would have thought that Wexford had their opportunity there, but they, you know, Kilkenny stuck with it and kept it tight and clawed it back in a little bit. So that's something that maybe this Clare team needs to learn. But you know, it was a pity. It was a pity. But it was a great opening 37-38 minutes, because it was brilliant. But just to maybe go back on those matchups, I think Tipperary got their matchups prior to the game really good, particularly in the back line. You know, Cottle Barrett being on Tony Kelly. Now, Tony Kelly went in full forward, and, you know, Paulie Maher was pushed out into the corner. Clare actually started with a three-man full forward line. And, you know, Paddy was at sixes and sevens. He slipped for the goal. He came out another time, went to clear house and missed everything. And Ian Galvin got an opportunity to get a pint. Could have been even a half chance of a goal on. And he really caused him problems. And I think Paul's right. Ian Galvin coming out around the middle third and creating the two-man full forward line, it played into Tipperary's hands. And it was only then that Paddy Maher came into the game. And in the second half then, Paddy Maher got to go as the sweeper when the Clare were down to 14. And you see, at that stage, he had such a foothold in the game that when they did move Galvin back in, you know, it didn't matter. Paddy Maher's gander was open. He just, you know, he finished strong and Galvin got injured then and got taken off. But, you know, it's amazing how these games can ebb and flow, and small decisions like that can actually push things in your favour. But they also got the David Reedy was tied up quite well by Brendan Maher. You know, Barry Heffernan, as I said, had a very good game in Aaron Shanahan. And then the other end, I suppose they learnt as the game went on. They made good in-game decisions. You know, Shamie Canlan started centre forward. It didn't work on John Canlan. And they pushed him inside and, you know, put him back into his more favourable position at full forward. And they brought out Bubbles. Bubbles, prior to that, was playing the kind of withdrawn corner forward role to try and nullify John Conlon. But it wasn't working. You know, he was kind of caught in no man's land. He was neither playing his own game nor he wasn't stopping Conlon. But when he went out centre forward on him and drifted off Conlon, you know, he sniped him for 4 points and could have had a couple more. He was disappointed in himself on one or two occasions. So I thought Tip's in-game management was really good as well. And there's a video going around Twitter that was really good where it shows Sheedy talking to his players. He's a quiet word with Bubbles. He's a quiet word with Jake Morris. And he turns around to Conlon. I think it was at the first water break, and he hits him a kind of a little dunt in the chest and said, "Get going. You know, you're a big, strong man." This is what looked like he was saying, you know, start using your size and get going. And, you know, Callan just shrugged and kind of said, "Yeah, okay." And I just thought that was brilliant man management from Liam Sheedy to know who he needed to talk to in what fashion. It shows he was showing all his experience in that moment.
Yeah, I saw that video and I really like Shamie Callan's reaction to the poke in the chest for everything he's done in the game, to go, "Yes, sir." You know what I mean? Yeah. Like he's in the army, Paul.
No, I did see that, what Brian's talking about. It was brilliant. It was a great little snippet. And like, how quick, I mean, it looked like he was nearly schizophrenic. He turned so quickly from his personalities. And it was literally that hand on the shoulder, that literally, "You're all right, you're in the game, get the ball, pop it off," and one or two. And straight away, as soon as I turned around and he hit him the dunt in the chest. And in fairness to Shamie, look, Shamie's a great fella. Like, Shamie just knew that, like, yeah, listen, I'm not in the game or whatever it is. And just, yeah, 100%, I'll get into it. And that's the type of fella he is. But it was great man management. Brilliant.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. Right, the last game, lads, Limerick 2-22, Cork 1-17. Not a classic at all. An awful lot of wides. In this one, there was another sin bin and penalty in this one, lads. We don't want to spend too much time on it. You know, quickly looked very harsh. Cahalan go down very easily? Like, I mean, is a foul was a foul, but Jesus, could we get into a situation where a player simulates this now?
Well, you know, this is what we're. I think it is a dangerous area. It could possibly happen that if players think that they don't go down, they're not going to get it. Possibly. I mean, we've seen enough of it with soccer over the years. But
he would kind of cut across Casey. Like, what was Casey meant to do?
Look, and Casey isn't that kind of player. Casey was after working back far enough now to go back and not just, you know, he wasn't going to foul a fella. But again, Brian has said it earlier. It was a clumsy foul if it was anything, but it wasn't what the rule has been brought in for. Yeah. It was accidental, and he might have been tired when he got back there, but it certainly wasn't cynical. Was it a goal scoring? I don't think it really was. It was harsh enough now for Peter Casey to be sent off. And he's not that player. If he goes back that far, you're not going back just to foul a fella. You're going back to try and get a decent tackle in. So I think it was fairly harsh in him, to be honest.
Yeah,
Just leave corner forwards up the other end. You don't need to get in.
Brian, he was running past someone and they popped the ball to him and it was way behind him at the start of the game, and he managed to hold it on the hurl and bring it from behind him around the front of him before, I think he scored off it. Do you remember that? It was like, he's skill on the Keane Lynch level, Peter Casey.
He's a wizard with the ball, in fairness to him. He's excellent. But look, they're all lad. Keane Lynch, Gerard Hegarty, the amount of times, and it's not the first time we've seen them, the flicking the ball off the ground. We here in Offaly, obviously, we used to call it the John Try flick. He was synonymous with it. But he did it not that frequently in games, but the Limerick boys seem to do it 2-3 times a game all the time. And the amazing thing about it is it's not usually a stationary ball. They seem to do it even in full flight.
Right.
They're off the charts at the moment in terms of their level of skill. And it was gas. You know, both teams came off giving out about their wides. You know, Cork came off kind of going, geez, we missed 118 and we should have closed the gap and the game was there for them. And it was. But at the same time, Limerick had 20 wides. You know, and they wouldn't have been happy with their performance either. It was just Limerick, I suppose, got those two goals in injury time in the first half. First one was fortuitous, but the second one was a brilliant finish by Kyle Hayes.
Well, that's the thing. And like, I mean, a bit like the analysis from the Clare Tip game, Cork going so well, Clare game going so well, boom, boom, two goals before half time. The game was over then. Like, I was like, that's it. Like, they weren't coming back against Limerick 6 points down. I can only imagine what they were thinking after putting such an effort into it, Paul. And to be honest, playing well, got it nicely done tactically, where Coleman's dropping off Lynch and the young midfielder, Merrick, I think his name is picking up Lynch in general play. And to me, they fixed their puck outs, varying them lovely. They weren't being turned over. And you're like, geez, Cork are really up for this. And then just gone.
Half time
within a space of 2 minutes.
And that's it. And it's the danger. It's that goal before half time that we always talk about. That's a really important goal. But that's, again, that's Limerick, you know, in terms of champions kind of tend to do these sort of things. Like, you know, and Kyle Hayes, you see where he came from. Like, he came running the whole way up. And there's an understanding there that, you know, Kyle Hayes could be making this run. Even if you don't see him at the time, Dermot Burns, he could be off the shoulder. And that's the thing. It's not even that Cork switched off. They didn't do a whole lot wrong. It's just that Kyle Hayes committed to making this run. He has the energy and the ability. I mean, he's a forward most of his life. He's only back half back the last year or so it is. But the
pass from Galan,
it was top class, yeah.
Oh my God, it was a no look and he hit it off the ground and bounced up into his hand.
And knowing full well, because you know, and Brian will tell you, like, that's the ball that you can't block. If you slap it into the ground, like, a player will keep the hurl up, might be between hip to shoulder height. Yeah. You slap it into the ground, he's not going to get the block on it. But then Kyle Hayes gets it, turns, and he still had a bit to do, you know. Stuck it into the side net and turned, and when the camera pans back to him, he's sprinting back towards left half back. And it was a tough one. If Cork made the half time without that, you know, they might have been in a better position. But you imagine going back in, sitting in as Cork, you're out of breath, you're after really putting a lot into the half, you're after hitting a few wides, and Limerick are after doing that to you. It was a tough place for them to come back. But, you know, full credit to Limerick that they took that opportunity, created it in the first place, took it, and that's what they'll do to you. You know, even if you don't give them an opportunity, they'll create the opportunity. So that's why we're tipping them as the main lads each year, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, I mean, but to Cork's credit, Brian, it wasn't an 8-point game. There was those last few scores went over. Like, they had it to 4 and the Cadogan missed to make it 3. You know, that should have gone over. I came out of the game thinking that Cork deserve a lot of credit. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I suppose that the Cadogan miss was really the one. For about 5 minutes, the game was ebbing and flowing and there was no one really taking command, but Limerick were able to keep that 4-point gap, you know, just there. They were keeping them at arm's length. And I suppose when you look at it that way, that was Cork's period of dominance because they were stopping Limerick from scoring, but they weren't scoring themselves. And Cadogan, he never looked confident. Now, it was a brilliantly worked movement from Cork just up to that. And Cadogan looked up and he thought about passing. And then he said, right, look, I kind of have to shoot here. But he really, there was two Cork players maybe about 20 metres away and more in central position. I thought one of them should have come to him to maybe look for the opportunity to shoot. And you have to remember as well, this is Cork having not played well. Patrick Horgan probably never had a poorer game. You know, he missed the penalty.
Yeah.
And I know it was a good save, but he, to me, Patrick Horgan missed it. He'll be eating himself up over that. He didn't get it far enough into the corner. And you know, any top forward, you're going to be blaming yourself in that situation. So, you know, he had a poor night in the freeze himself and he never really got into the game. And, you know, like, Robbie O'Flynn went off injured again and, you know, Seamus Harndy as well. So it was like a lot of things went against Cork. But they showed that they were able to trouble them. But the only thing is, you know, they were quite loud in coming into this game. Maybe not the players themselves, but the Cork crowd. And there was a huge level of expectation. It was built up that this Cork team was going to take Limerick down. and they'd invested a lot in it. And, you know, Kieran Kingston talks about afterwards about the confidence in the camp and the confidence in the players that they were going to be able to do it. But they just obviously came up short, and Paul already said it, champions have a way of just finding a way, closing out the game, doing enough, and then turning what should be only a 2 or 3 point victory into 7 or 8 points. And that's exactly what Limerick did. And they weren't overly impressive. And yet, having watched all the teams now at this stage, could you still bet against anyone actually turning them over when it gets down to the business and the championship? It's very hard to see it, you know. And look, we will see over the next few weeks, but there still seem to be those guys that are just one step ahead of everyone else.
Harnady actually had a brilliant first half. He was well in the action. Just on the Horgan miss penalty, Quaid didn't guess a side.
No.
And we see a lot of goalies now guessing sides.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. I know that ball's hit hard, but it's a bit further out. And you have a pretty long hurl there.
Yeah.
So without guessing, with the length of the hurl, should you be able to get across?
Yeah, I think there's a fair argument for both. I mean, if you guess, I mean, again, you're taking it into the lap of the gods that the penalty taker isn't just going to wait for you to fall and dive. But you're nearly pushing it back on the penalty taker. If you don't guess that you wait, you're not going to cover the full goal by just reaching or diving once he strikes it. But you leave a very small space, maybe a half a foot for him. So now the pressure's on him. If you stay standing, the penalty taker now has to stick it into that corner, and Patrick Corrigan didn't. He put it just about halfway between Nicky Quaid. So I think if you're a keeper, and you know, maybe a keeper would have a different opinion on it, you know, you're kind of stacking the odds a little bit more in your favour. You say, okay, I'm banking on him not burying it right in the corner. If it doesn't get buried right in the corner, I have a chance to get to this by waiting, seeing where is it going and getting a hurl to it. And that's what Nicky Quaid did, and it was a great stop, an important stop as well, you know. And then I suppose it goes back on Patrick Horgan, because he's the one with the supposed advantage, but now its penalty has been stopped. How does that affect the penalty taker now? He has to now go back out the pitch and after missing the penalty. So it was a great tactic from Nicky Quaid. Still takes a good goalkeeper to do it, but maybe that's what we'll see with keepers going forward. I don't think guessing is the way to go, because if you guess, the ball can still fly past you. It might be still traveling too fast.
Either way, yeah, that's it. John Kiely said after the game, Brian, he credited Kinnerk for the reshuffle after the sin bin. He said, while I was thinking about it, he had it done, and that's what he's really good at. He had it literally sorted within a second. He spotted straight away what needed to be done, and he got it done. Like, what did Kinnerk do? Did he move Keane Lynch inside? Because Coleman was dropping off Manningway and getting free, and is that the move he made? Or
yeah, look, again, it's one of those ones when you're not at the game, it's very, very hard to really make out what happened. You know, that kind of way. So it's, and obviously John Kiely's not going to go out and tell you.
Whoever asked him that question, I would love to have I was looking at that going, is there no more information than that?
You'd love to have been there to actually see what was the switch that they made. But look, this is, most inter-county teams at this stage will have it planned. You know, if we go down to 14, this is what we do. If we have a spare man, this is what we do. So I think that's what Kinnerk's there to do. Let's be honest. John Kiely's there to run the line. He's excellent manager, but that's exactly what he is. He's a manager. He delegates, and Kinnerk's there for the tactical awareness and tactical analysis and all those sort of things. And you know, it's his job sitting on the line to see those things and make sure that they happen. So I'm not surprised that Kinnerk did it. I don't think anyone's surprised that he did it. But I also think that almost every intercounty team, almost every club team at this stage should know how to set up in those situations.
Well, wasn't it interesting that Donovan got the goal? I say he's never scored a goal in his life. Maybe I'm wrong on this. Like, he's a more of a defensive kind of midfielder. But because Mellerick was picking up Keane Lynch in general play, I said Donovan just realised, here, geez, I'm free here the whole time. And maybe it took him a little while to realise this. And then he gets up and scores a goal. Again, Limerick kind of thinking.
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah, he's not the usual man to pop up. Again, I suppose that's, you know, the confidence was probably there that, you know, it's not the player that people are going to focus on, or the teams are going to focus on every week going out on Donovan, you know. So the fact that he just maybe just took a gamble on it and said, you know what, I'm not being watched here, I'll go. And, you know, fair play to him. But yeah, that's the advantage, I suppose, of, like, you have Keane Lynch around you and you have Aaron Gillan, you have all these different lads. You can maybe drift on up the pitch and maybe people are not having a look at you. But, you know, fair play to him. He took his chance. I don't know if he scored a goal before, but fair play.
I would guess no. Anyway.
I would guess no. We'll go with no for now, unless anyone corrects us.
A couple of incidents.
He does play,
go on.
He does play centre forward and midfield with his club Dune. So, you know, he wouldn't be totally alien to be up there.
Okay.
But,
defensive centre forward.
But Yeah, that would be it, though. Like, you know, he generally is, as you said, a defensive midfielder. But as you said, I think it shows how tactically aware Limerick are to realise that, you know, don't just sit back here now. You know, get up the field and punish them. And I suppose automatically what comes to mind there is you know, what Wexford sometimes do with Kevin Foley. He's not just that sitting sweeper. He can get up the field and punish them. And I think that's exactly what Limerick did with Darragh Donovan the other day, and it paid off the goal. Now, look, they were lucky. You know, the shot kind of... They were fortuitous, I think, the fact that it actually went in. But still, yeah, he got himself in the right position, and it was an overlap, and it paid off in the end. You're never going to miss if you don't shoot.
If you're not in, you can't win. I think you were looking for it. A couple of incidents to finish up with. I had to laugh at Seamus Flanagan buying a free off Cadogan at the start. Cadogan put his hand in over him, and Flanagan did the old Gaelic football trick where you hold the hand and drag the two of them down. I didn't realise that was done in hurling, Paul. Yeah. Is this a hurling trick as well?
Yeah, it's done in hurling. I think a lot of people would have maybe called Owen Larkin out for a few years ago on different things. But no, it is. It's done in hurling, and that's the thing with the... You know, I'd be coaching lads at the moment, younger fellas, and they'd be saying about, you know, if you're in the back line, what I'd be saying to lads is shorten the grip, don't let them, because players are grabbing the hurl and they're going down and making it look like that the hurl was around the neck. And right, fairness, it's hard for referees to tell as well, but no, it is something that happens a lot. That was a bit more blatant, and maybe we see it on television, but...
Oh, there's the proper close-up of this one now. Yeah. The perfect execution of it.
Yeah, that's it. But no, it does happen. I would, maybe being in the Defenders Club here, I'd say forwards do a little bit more to defenders, but... stop now, Brian. No, but it does happen. It happens on both sides. Backs, midfielders, forwards. Everyone's doing it, but it's a tough one to call. It's a tough one for referees as well, because it looks like a hurl has gone in around, but... And then what does the player do? Let go of his hurl or hold on to the hurl, and you're not breaking the tackle at all. So unfortunately it does happen, and when it does happen to you, it's happened before you know it's happening. Like you're in the freaking tackle as
so
happens.
The whole trick is not to wrap the hurl in around. You shouldn't really be putting the hurl in around him at all anyways, should you? You should just leave your hands out so he can't do that. What are you benefiting from sticking the hurl around him?
Well, just the thing, you're trying to get a flick on the ball, but oftentimes I'd be saying to lads, you know, if you have a forward, a non-rushing forward coming in on top of you, you know, kind of go to him, but then pull back a small bit, but shorten up the grip. Don't leave the hurl out there, because often forwards will lean in towards you. You know,
all right,
fair play to
them.
They're making you, because you're under pressure to actually make the tackle. So they lean in. But if you have a hurl out, the hurl, you see it, it'll rise up a small bit and might go around the neck or whatever. But sometimes when in doubt, lads will grab the hurl and just, you know, completely sell the situation.
Yeah, no.
Not to be hard in the forwards now, Brian.
I just think maybe it's the battles I had down through the years. Damien Rail from Limerick and Malachy Travers from Wexford were the ultimate for winning a ball, coming towards you, wrapping up your arms and just falling on the ground. Free out. Go on, drive it on. But actually, I think of Dan McCormack. He did it actually, they actually waved play on yesterday.
Yeah.
Like for the height of him, he's some man to win that free where he ducks kind of the head down slightly and gets your man's arm, and he kind of throws his own arms up into the air and say, look, it's a high hurdle on my neck. Some players are brilliant at it, you know what I mean? But I think most people know what players are at, but unfortunately referees don't seem to be picking up. And I think, and we did talk about this with Woolley before, players that are ducking down with their head, it should be a free the other way. Actually, Shane Bennett got away with it against Clare last week, where he just ducked down and ran at Shane Conlon like a bull, and he actually won a free. But to me, those frees should be the other way when you're trying to duck down like that. And it's like, if the referee sees it the other way, it's seen as a high tackle and it could be a potential yellow or even red.
Yeah.
When in fact the player is just totally just ducking down into the tackle. I don't like that one at all.
Well, that's the thing. In Gaelic football, referees have copped onto it. They don't give frees for that anymore, because it was just, because in football you'd put your hand in more tapping at the ball. They grab your hand and pull you down and it's a free. And for years you were getting away with it, but referees have totally wised up, almost to the point now where they've gone too far that way. Won't give you one. Another one I wanted to mention, Flanagan obviously had a bit of a dirty flick on Cahillane, but there was another one on poor young Mellerick where Willie O'Donoghue left a good bit on him. And not enough to poor Willie O'Donoghue, who's a monster of a man.
Yeah.
Garrod Hegarty came in and left a good bit on him then after that. I was like, Jesus, lads, you know, like, I mean, the referee kind of just didn't make much of a deal of that at all.
Yeah, look, sure, again, it goes back to this interpretation. I mean, they're tough ones to call and we want to see it be physical, but then, you know, I saw John Donnelly making a tackle at the weekend where he shouldered, I can't remember who it was, might have been Foley or someone, but at the time it didn't look like a great tackle. You could agree that it was a free out. A free was given, it was free out. But I saw a photo on Sports File afterwards where it was fairly square, actually, the actual impact itself. But because Donnelly's a big man, he hit him hard. The other ones were a little bit different, of course, the Limerick ones you're talking about. But, you know, players are trying to go in and commit and...
Let's just say he's lucky he had a helmet on him, really.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, no, it was a heavy tackle, though, in fairness, and the tackles were heavy. But look, again, it comes back to the referee's interpretation. What did he see? And it is hard to be tough on referees in that situation of what angle did he see it at? And but dangerous tackle nonetheless. I mean, as a player, given that type of tackle to another player, I mean, head on, we've seen a few tackles over the last while where the players have hit in the head as a player is down, let's say, and coming up or rising up with the ball, and a tackle to the head. I mean, you as a player, you shouldn't be going in hitting a fella in the head. I mean, a bit of sportsmanship, you know, you're not going in tackling. If you hit him and you didn't mean to, fair enough. But a few of them ones with the, you know, anything to do with the neck and the head, it's not nice as a player to be going in as much as you want to be competitive on someone.
Is this a case, just to finish up on this point, Brian, is this like Limerick play on the edge and sometimes you almost compliment them for that and that's just the way it is?
Yeah, I think the common denominator here was Gerard Hegarty hit both of those players as hard as you like after the free again. So it was a double whammy and he knows exactly what he's doing. I tweeted it, a couple of Limerick people didn't like it, but he hit Damien Catalan some shoulder in the head after the flick. And, you know, everyone's concentrating on the flick. And then he hit Mellerick after that well, yeah. Another dunt after Will. So he knows what he's doing. And you need, look, let's be honest, I'm not giving out about Gerard Hegarty. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's not going to become out all as if he's a saint afterwards. You need players like that. Any team that wins has players like that. You know, that criticism is leveled at the Kilkenny team that Paul Murphy was on for years. You know, all players playing on the edge, they cross the line too often. Come on, it's dog eat dog in inter-county championship. Is it dirty? Yeah, it is. Were there red card instances? They probably were. Did he get away with them? He did. You know, so like, let's be honest, as long as he stays getting away with him, he's going to stay doing them. But he will get caught one of these days, there's no doubt about it.
The whole Gerard Hegarty one is a head scratcher, because in the history of hurling, you cannot be that skillful and that dirty at the same time. You're either one or the other, right? So, like, I mean, you just can't be that brilliant and be a dirty whore as well.
If you run for your money.
Okay, lads, listen, we've gone way over time. We'll leave it there. That's the longest show we'll probably do all year. We'll be back. I'm not sure this weekend. I think there's Joe McDonagh Cup and the Laois Antrim relegation match. So we'll do a show on Thursday, I'm sure, and we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do.
No, we don't.
A donkey eat and a donkey eat a pallet. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, spilt. But I bust out laughing watching.